Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yes, we did. We started to burn many, many things we found. That's the wonderful Dara Williams singing with Pete Seeger. Dara Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns and the Rivertown Kids on the Grammy Award-winning Tomorrow's Children, that's the name of that album, or CD. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're back for another hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Here at our new time, Monday at 3 p.m., Eastern, I said it was Eastern Standard Time. I guess we're still on Daylight Time. Eastern Daylight Time. Some of you may be listening to this at other hours because it's a WPRN-FM. On the website, we have a devastating, dynamite, fantastic show with my, today with my long time, since 1989, co-conspirator Bob Petrakis. We are both speaking to you from central, lush liberal central Ohio. Bob, you there?
I'm here, Harvey.
All right. So we have here today a full hour to go through the basics of the stolen election syndrome that has become to define American politics. What really defines American politics in the 21st century is the power of the corporation, and the power of corporations is being felt through the electoral process and the corporation's ability to buy, steal, and otherwise mutilate the electoral process. Now, Bob and I are both college teachers. Bob, you have a PhD in political science from Wayne State University, and a lawyer's degree, and you have passed the bar in Ohio. Your degree is from the Moritz School at Ohio State. Is that correct?
Correct. The law school, sure.
And as a political scientist, you have a tremendous background in electoral politics, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So Bob and I are co-authors of a new book. This is our fifth book on election protection. The most recent book, which is only an e-book because we have a small window and we want to keep the price down, is Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? That's also the title of an article that we've put up on the Internet. It's at freepress.org. It's been picked up by commondreams.org, op-ed news. Is that .org or .com? I don't remember. A wide range of other websites here and around the world. And the theme of the article, of course, is the question of whether or not the GOP will steal this election. The question almost answers itself. The Nation magazine has run a major piece called Will They Buy the 2012 Election? And, of course, given the nature of the Citizens United decision, they can in fact pour as the GOP and the corporations that sponsor them or define them can in fact pour in as much money as God to buy this election, but that may not be enough. My gut sense, and Bob, you can chime in please, is that Obama will probably carry the popular vote this year. I think there's a reasonable certainty he'll carry the popular vote in the United States. The question then becomes, will he get the actual vote count, and will he win in the Electoral College? What do you think, Bob?
Well, I think, you know, if it was a fair count, he would win the popular vote and the electoral vote. I think the strategy right now is to, there's two things. The first thing you do is you repress the vote, through these restrictive ID laws and making it difficult and strange kind of private companies controlling the electronic registrations. So So you repress the vote, and then if it's, and then you get it close enough, which usually is, you know, within, 10 points, and then you sort of flip it. And that's what appears that their strategy is. But, I think that they want to, even if Obama wins the popular vote, you know, they're shooting to win closely in Florida and Ohio and a few of the swing states.
Right, Pennsylvania. So let's today's news, by the way, we should mention, being here in Central Ohio, is that the two members of the election board from Montgomery County, which is Dayton in Ohio, who dared to vote allow the public to vote on Sunday prior to the election, were fired as election board members from the Montgomery County Board of Elections, and they have sued Ohio Secretary of State John Husted to be reinstated. The great irony here, I mean, it just gets wilder and wilder, is that these two guys were ordered to vote against against allowing people to vote the Sunday before election, and they were fired, and now Husted himself has been forced to endorse voting before the election because the court has ruled, at least temporarily, that we are to have Sunday voting prior to the election. You obviously been following this, Bob, as an attorney. What do you make of this?
Well, I mean, it's really quite odd because the thing they proposed didn't pass. It was a 2-2 tie.
Right.
Which Husted, the Secretary of State, a Republican, then breaks the tie and says you can't have early voting. So, they were fired for being insubordinate for reintroducing as election officials a proposal that never was passed. So it's very strange, but really more important, the key factor is a lot of the black churches give sermons on the Sunday before the election and encourage their congregation to go out and vote. They don't tell them how to vote, which would be illegal, but they tell them to go and vote, and sometimes they take church buses, vans, people carpool, and they make it a celebration of democracy. So here in Columbus, in Franklin County, the capital city of Columbus, and by the way, the largest city in Ohio, not the largest metro area, but the largest city, the Republican county chair, Dana Price, said that he wasn't going to kowtow to the, you know, black get out the vote, machine.
Well, now, am I mistaken, Bob? Aren't there white Christian churches that also meet on Sunday?
Yes, and could do the same thing.
I thought so. I mean,
this is that famed voting while black.
Right.
And really, no one talks about repressing the white vote. But you've got numerous instances, from Paul Weyrich, with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, to, the famed Papa George comments, the Republican Party chair in Michigan, talking about repressing the Detroit area vote. Again, Nick Papa George and Dana Price and others, where the Republicans will admit the only way they can win is by, of course, repressing black votes.
Right.
I remember in the last poll, Romney actually, it's plus or minus 3, but Romney actually showed up at 0% of black voters, which may be as high as 3% and maybe as low as minus
3%. Yeah, right. So, there must be like four black Americans, African Americans, who are going to vote for Romney this year. So let's get this straight, because we're going to do a whole hour here. Bob Fitrakis and I have been collaborating since 2004 on election protection issues, although Bob goes further back in history. And we are both, I'm not teaching this year at Columbus, this semester at Columbus State, but Bob is a full professor at Columbus State Community College here in Central Ohio, and I have taught there for 6 years. And what happened to us is that in 2004, we witnessed before our very eyes the theft of the presidential election in Central Ohio. It happened here. Ohio decided the election of 2004. John Kerry conceded with 250,000 votes uncounted. We proceeded, since written five books about election protection based largely on our experiences here in Ohio. The most recent book is Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? It's available as an e-book. We've only published it as an e-book to keep the price down. It's $4.99 for the 99%, and it's at freepress.org and harveywasserman.ning.com. So what we want to do now is lay out how we believe the GOP could, in fact, steal the 2012 election. Now, there are two primary methods that they are going to do this, although in our last article, which is still posted at freepress.org and commondreams.org and a number of other places, we listed six primary factors in the ability of the GOP, the Republican Party, to steal this election. And by the way, by way of clarification, neither Bob nor I is supporting Barack Obama for president. We are not Democrats. Bob is the, well, we small d Democrats. We are not members or supporters of the Democratic Party. Bob is the Green Party congressional candidate for the U.S. Congress from the district in which I live on the east side of Columbus, and I have a Fetrakis for Congress bumper sticker, and I'm looking at a poster in my study here of a postcard that I got actually for Jill Stein and Bob Fetrakis. Jill Stein is the presidential candidate from the Green Party, and I will be voting for her for president. So we are not here shrying and moaning about the theft, possible theft of the election from Barack Obama because of support for Barack Obama. What we support is a true democratic process in this country where elections cannot be stolen. We feel that the problem, speaking for your Bob here quickly, you can correct me, we feel that the primary problem with stolen elections is not Democrats stealing elections from Republicans and vice versa, which defines much of our history, but the fact that if these two parties can steal elections from each other, they can certainly join together and gang up and ban or prevent any third-party grassroots movement from making use of the ballot and getting the presidency in that manner. Do you want to add to that, Bob?
Well, yeah, I would just look back at history, Harvey. You're a historian. You wrote that famed Harvey Wasserman's History of the United States, which when I was a very young lad, I actually purchased when I was a freshman in college, and I hadn't realized that you weren't that much older than me. But in there, you deal a lot with Eugene Victor Debs. When the United States was at its most progressive, which really is in the 1912 election, where the conservative candidate, Big Bob Taft, Howard Taft, Howard Taft was ours in Ohio.
William Howard Taft is the only president of the United States to get stuck in the White House bathtub.
And Mr. Taft came in third as a conservative Republican. Woodrow Wilson, you know, won the election as a progressive and a real independent progressive. Teddy Roosevelt came in second, but Eugene Victor Debs as a socialist, as a grassroots radical socialist, got 6% of the vote. When and even in the 1930s, she wouldn't have got the reforms from FDR had there not been a vibrant socialist and communist party and millions of workers, 6 million workers at once, striking throughout America. So essentially, part of what's going on, Harvey, is you want to lock the debate on the right side. And you do that by having these private companies count the vote, and you do it by essentially letting the Democrats know that you can, in fact, steal these elections. And that goes part and parcel with the famous and bizarre discussion where the, you know, Newt Gingrich writes a book. I think they're coming for me. writes a book essentially saying Obama's a socialist. The reason you do that is because then you don't really have to have progressive left-wing discussions on controlling capitalism and relocalizing your economy through entrepreneurs and co-ops.
Right. And, you know, as you have said and others, when people call Obama a socialist, we just say, well, he's not that good.
You know, he's not half that good.
No. So in our piece and in our book, we lay out six basic factors that will would allow, if they're inclined, and we certainly think they are, to the Republican Party to steal the upcoming election. In other words, if Obama wins the popular vote, which he thinks he will do, we think he will do, and if he wins the electoral vote, which we think would be likely in a fair election, nonetheless, these six factors allow the Republican Party to steal the election. The first, of course, is, and we'll talk about these in detail, but let me go through them. First is the Citizens United decision, which allows corporations to spend as much money as they want in the electoral process without really much accountability or transparency. There's no real, you know, they're fighting over it in various ways, but there's no real hardcore requirement for the corporations to declare and make public what money they're spending. And that really is the 800-pound gorilla in this election. We have billionaires like Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers and the Chamber of Commerce coming up and saying that they will spend, quote, whatever it takes to defeat Barack Obama. I mean, I think they're crazy, frankly. If I was a major corporation, I would want Obama in there instead of Romney, but we can talk about that. The second basic factor is, of course, the Electoral College itself. The Electoral College is, and we'll discuss these one by one in a few minutes, the Electoral College is an anachronism. It was established to allow slaveholders to have additional power in the government to actually vote their slaves who themselves could not vote. The third factor is the restriction, the new national Jim Crow that we're experiencing, where voting people, citizens are being deprived of the right to vote, with these voter ID laws, which the Brennan Center at New York University estimates will deprive more than 10 million Americans, 10 million is a lot of people, to more than 10 million Americans of their vote, the right to vote, and just general stripping of the voter rolls. And you, Bob, have come up through your research with the fact that more than a million Ohioans have been stripped from the voter rolls since 2009, and about 2.5 million since 2000. So we can talk about that. Then the next factor is electronic voting machines. And the electronic voting machines have proliferated since the year 2000, when they were instrumental in stealing the theft of the 2000 election from Al Gore, who hasn't said a word, of course, in 12 years about it, to George W. Bush, who, you know, if he said, I don't even know if he knows what happened. And that, of course, electronic voting machines really did decide, the theft of them really did decide the election in Ohio in 2004 and put Bush back in the White House for 4 years instead of John Kerry, and he didn't say a word about it either. Then we have the reality that in the swing states, because of the nature of the Electoral College, the swing states really decide this election, a dozen out of the 50 states maybe, and in nine of the key swing states this year, we have Republican governors. Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, New Mexico, and Arizona all have Republican governors. And that when you have a Republican governor in a state with electronic voting machines, it's a piece of cake to flip the vote. And so, really, given that situation, I don't give Obama much chance. And the final factor is what really decided the 2008 election, and partly due to our writings and Greg Palast, who has written the introduction to our book, and Bev Harris, and a number of other people who have written about it, Mark Crispin Miller, Bobby Kennedy, of course, did a major piece in Rolling Stone. People were inspired and really motivated to come out in 2008 in favor of Barack Obama to protect the vote at the polls. You know, Bob and I, you and I saw thousands of people coming into Central Ohio. I mean, people actually, there were too many of them. But they went to the polls. They made sure people could vote. They got people to the vote. They monitored as closely as possibly can the electoral vote count or the electronic vote count. And by God, Obama won. But this year, you know, so many people are disappointed with Obama, primarily because of his failure to shut Guantanamo, his continuation of the drug war and the escalation of the war in Afghanistan. Many of the people, I'm sure, who worked for him in 2008 will vote for him in 2012, but that's not going to be enough. People are going to have to be at the polls, and I kind of doubt that he's going to have enough of a grassroots army to protect the vote. So those are the basic six factors, and let's go through them one by one, Bob. Let's start with Citizens United. What impact, Bob Fitrakis, a professor of political science at Homer State Community College and attorney at law, what impact do you think that Citizens United and the unlimited spending of money will have on the 2012 election?
Well, I mean, you've already seen it. I mean, there's been an ongoing campaign here in Ohio between Sherrod Brown and Josh Mandel.
Oh, God.
I mean,
Josh Mandel.
Awash with money, right?
Yeah, Josh Mandel. I mean, this kid is such an embarrassment. I mean, the Republican candidate for president for senator U.S. Senate in Ohio looks like he's about 12 years old. He has no credential whatsoever. I mean, it's an embarrassment to see this guy running against Sherrod Brown, who's actually one of the best senators in the whole Congress. He's very well educated, very astute, and he's being like buried in corporate money here.
Yeah, I mean the amount of money in Citizens United has altered the face of politics. I mean, there was always big money and people complained, but now there's absolutely no restraint as anonymous, billionaires, plutocrats. I mean, really, quite literally, it's politics by the rich. In the old days, we used to complain that 1% of the population gave 90% of the money, but it's tilted. So you're going to see over $1 billion on each side, and we're not going to know where the money's coming from, and all of it in these 30-second vicious propaganda campaigns. I can't imagine a worse way to do politics and to make key decisions for a democratic people than
small
the current
democratic
system under Citizens United.
Yeah, this is really a disaster. And we have had a whole tsunami of cash pouring in and that we don't know about. I mean, it's very clear that Karl Rove is commandeering or commanding at least $100 million. And I think his goal, his publicly stated goal, was to get $150 million. I mean, it's insane. And, of course, Bob, can you explain, as a political scientist, how this year is different from all other years? What's different about the electoral scene now vis-a-vis money versus prior to this year in the Citizens United decision?
Well, Citizens United allows, anonymous donations from essentially what are thought to be health and welfare organizations where they say, they have these vicious attacks, and then they say, call Sherrod Brown and, tell him to quit, beating small puppies.
yeah.
And so this money's anonymous. It's corporate and wealthy money,
right,
and you can't really trace it. The vicious part of it, in the old days, before Citizens United, money would come in. There were certain limits on it. They still were large amounts, but you could actually trace where the money came from. Right now, we don't know where this money is coming from, and we don't know who gave it, and it appears to be limitless.
Yeah, and so basically we have no idea where this money is coming from. We have no way to track it. Super PACs, which have been lampooned quite brilliantly by Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, are just running the show. And I think we've seen enough campaigns. We can predict pretty clearly what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you right now that the polls up until about 2 weeks prior to the election will show Barack Obama ahead. It'll be close in swing states, but he'll be ahead. And then suddenly there will be this tidal wave of advertising for Mitt Romney. And the Amen choir there at Fox News, and I shouldn't say Fox News, Fox, and other media outlets will start to note whether it happens or not. They'll start to note a shift. You'll hear Brit Hume and Chris Wallace and all these other toadies talking about how the American people are shifting toward Barack Obama. And then we'll have Election Day, and there'll be a turnout of whatever it is. And that, of course, a big turnout always favors the Democrats, especially in Ohio. especially in Cleveland. But nonetheless, it'll be what it is. And Barack Obama will be leading into the night, and then somewhere around midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, the electronic tabulations will stop, and there'll be a glitch. And when we emerge from this late night glitch, Mitt Romney will have won the election. Would you say that's a reasonable scenario, Bob?
Oh, I think it's the most likely scenario, and part of it, I mean, 25% of our votes, the estimate is, it's going to be counted by a Spanish based company, Sitel. Our friends at SmartTech, who we believe flipped the vote in the 2004 election.
Now, SmartTech is a Bush family related company.
You know, they handled, you know, direct ties to the White House. GWB, George, Walker Bush ended up, 43 was on that site. Swift Voters for Truth attacking Kerry. Those were all tied to SmartTech. They branched out. They bought the Melissa Data in California. They also now have servers in Atlanta. I mean, you know, Diebold, we wrote so much and others wrote so much about him. Their name, you know, was mud, so to speak, and they had to, they kind of merged. They changed their name to Premier and then merged with ESNS, but then spun off part of their operations into Dominion, which is a Canadian-owned company and has ties with this Command Central, the weird little group that kind of electronically counted 10% of the vote in Wisconsin, which came up with a very odd result. The exit polls are showing it neck and neck, and suddenly, you know, Walker beats back the recall by 7 points. Incredibly unlikely. So, I mean, we don't know who are these shadowy forces, and increasingly they're all bragging that they have remote databases and access. So, scary times.
We are going to take a short break. We're talking with Bob Petrakis and it's Harvey Wasserman here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We're laying out the scenario for how the GOP could steal America's 2012 election. Somewhat depressing, but we want people to know the reality and where there's time yet to deal with it. We'll be back after this break. Thank you. Indeed, that's the future for you and me. That's the great Dana Lyons singing the Solartopia song, the Rocky Top version. I'm talking with Bob Petrakis, my co-conspirator since the late 1980s, about our fifth book here, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? We have been talking about the six factors that will allow the GOP to steal it. If they want to, the Citizens United decision allowing a massive unlimited quantities of corporate cash for the first time in U.S. history, without any accountability, actually, without any accounting or transparency. The ongoing existence of the Electoral College, which disenfranchises most of the country on a presidential vote. The presence of the national Jim Crow, nationwide Jim Crow campaign by the Republicans to disenfranchise as many suspected Democrats as possible, but more than 10 million by the estimate of the Brennan Center at New York University, the presence of electronic voting machines, which will allow the manipulation of the vote count, the presence of 9 Republican governors in the key swing states, and finally, the lack of enthusiasm of the election protection movement that put Obama in the White House in 2008. You know, people ask us, well, if they could steal it, why'd they let Obama in? And it wasn't, they didn't let Obama in. he got in because people came to the polls and made sure that people got out to vote and that their vote was protected. Those are the six basic factors. Bob, what else can we talk about this huge amount of money? When Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers say they'll spend whatever it takes to elect Mitt Romney, do we take him seriously?
Yeah, I think they want the best Mormon money can buy. as long as he keeps the microchip in him, I mean, it's,
yeah, right.
You look at the Republican convention again, it looked like kind of Stepford Wives meet Deliverance. But I mean, when they say that, they literally mean it. They're billionaires, you know. So if they have to drop $10 million, $20 million, you know, at a pop, it's not a problem to them. It's pocket change.
And what will they do with this money?
To a large extent, a lot of this is going into, you know, the type of organizations, Crossroads, that Boss Rove has put together, right? I mean, this is the return of, Mark Hanna right here, right? The two most important things in politics, to paraphrase him, are money, and I can't remember the other one. Rove really is a one-man boss. I mean, he understood that what you really got to do is suck up to the billionaires and the real multimillionaires and get as much money as you can and do analysis and hire the best people on earth, psychologists, media writers, and do your focus groups and, do your survey research and then go out and run these incredible misleading 30-second propaganda ads. And he's got, he's the boss. He controls the people with the deep pockets that have no problem, writing a $20 million check.
Yes, and they're happy to do it, which tells you how much it's worth to control the presidency. What they're spending now on is, as you say, organization and advertising. But when push comes to shove, that money is available to buy the electronic vote count and do whatever is needed to guarantee the election. It makes us kind of a cross between, any number of third world countries where elections have been bought and paid for really for centuries by the American government, but specifically now by corporations since the American Civil War. So with the unlimited amount of cash pouring in, the first reality to stealing an electoral victory in a presidential campaign in this country is the reality of the Electoral College. Now, in a normal democracy, or a democracy that really is a democracy, you would expect that the public has the right to vote and have the votes counted, where the person who gets the most votes becomes President of the United States. But we have this ridiculous Electoral College, which was put in place at the Constitutional Convention in 1787. And Bob, can you explain, well, of course, what you read in the history books is that the main reason was that the small states were afraid that the big states would dominate. And there was that reality, but it also had to do with slavery. Bob, can you tell us about the three-fifths bonus and what that's all about?
Well, it's you're counting your slaves as three-fifths of a person for purposes of representation, which means it gets you a larger congressional delegation and for apportionment. So you're in a situation that if in many of those states they took that literally, and hence if you've got 100 slaves, there's 60 votes there. And of course, since the slaves couldn't vote in many of those area, of course their master would be allowed to vote his chattel. And so someone with 100 slaves just got 61 votes.
You're right. So the reality of American politics in the beginning is that from George Washington to James Buchanan, the president just before Abe Lincoln, every president of the United States either owned slaves or his vice president did. That even included John Adams, whose vice president was Tom Jefferson, and John Quincy Adams, a ferocious abolitionist whose vice president was none other than John C. Calhoun, a ferocious defender of slavery. So, for some reason, During the Electoral during and after the Civil War, the Union never abolished the Electoral College. And we saw, not only do we have an Electoral College, but it still has an even number of votes. So you could, in fact, we almost did, in fact, in 2004, have a tie. Can you imagine a tie in the Electoral College? And it did happen in 1876, and the Republican Ohio and Rutherford B. Hayes wound up stealing that election from Samuel Tilden, the Democrat, who got 250,000 more votes than Hayes did, but they tied up the Electoral College. And I think it was Iowa, Nevada, and New Mexico, had they shifted during the 2004 election, we actually had a mathematical possibility of a tie in the Electoral College. And here we have, after all these years, it's 2012 now, we still have this ridiculous anachronism. And if you're listening in, if you live in New York or California or Texas or New England, except for New Hampshire, I mean, you have no vote. You have no say in who becomes president. Your vote is meaningless. It's only us lucky Buckeyes here whose vote actually counts.
Absolutely, and that's why Obama and Romney and are in here, it seems, weekly, and sometimes it seems, twice a day.
Yes, and so, they don't even bother with yard signs in Illinois or, many states in the South. I mean, there's no reason to go there because but those people are effectively disenfranchised. Now, in 2012, this translates into a more viable election. If you had to steal an election in which we did a national vote count and everybody's vote counted equally, and the winner would be the one who actually gets the most votes, that would cost a lot more money to rig than where you can go into, say, a dozen states and split the vote. I mean, the fact is that whoever carries Florida, Pennsylvania, and Ohio this year will probably win the presidency. And so if you have unlimited cash from Citizens United and you want to flip the presidency, you just got to buy three states. And those three states all basically have a Republican governors this year.
Right, and this goes to a much greater flaw in the system. I don't know your specific beliefs, Harvey, but it's one of the reasons why I prefer a proportional system where you actually divide up the Electoral College votes, if you're stuck with that antiquated and racist system, by the actual vote in the state. And that might also enhance, say, if the Greens got 5%, they would get 5% of the electoral vote, and you divide it by the actual vote instead of this winner-take-all system, which causes everything to be concentrated on these three major states.
Yeah, and that really, so this second factor, the Electoral College, really owes its, as we say, its origins to slavery. There's absolutely no rational reasons for having an Electoral College. I mean, it's the only one that George Bush ever graduated from. No, actually, that's not true. It's the only one he did well in, let's put it that way. The Electoral College has facilitated the election of the guy who came in second, let's put it that way, in 1800. Thomas Jefferson was elected president essentially because of the three-fifths bonus. If it had not been for the Electoral College, Jefferson would have lost, and John Adams would have been reelected. In 1824, John Quincy Adams was soundly defeated by Andrew Jackson, about 150,000 votes to about 100,000 votes. I mean, this is a major 3-2 victory. John Quincy cut a deal with Henry Clay and made a slave owner John Calhoun his vice president, and he became president. Then in 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes, as I mentioned, lost by 250,000 votes, but nonetheless manipulated the Electoral College and became president. In 1888, Benjamin Harrison lost very substantially to the incumbent Democrat Grover Cleveland, but won in the Electoral College, and that's why Cleveland is actually our only president who had non-consecutive terms. Cleveland won in 1884. He won again in 1888, but lost the Electoral College. So then he ran a third time, and he won again in 1892. Then in 2000, of course, George W. Bush lost the popular vote by 500,000, but nonetheless stole Florida and became president. And then in 2004, we believe that John Kerry probably legitimately carried a national plurality in the vote, but lost in the Electoral College. So also 1896, we believe, was stolen, though the official vote count gave William McKinley a big leg up. So the Electoral College is the key to stealing elections in 2012. And as Bob has said, you know, three states will do it, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. They all have Republican governors. And, you know, it's going to take a miracle, as far as I can tell, for Barack Obama to overcome that. Now, another reason for that, of course, Bob, and you've written a lot about this, done a lot of research, is the massive disenfranchisement that's going on around the country, the new Jim Crow, the national Jim Crow aimed at people suspected of being leaning towards the Democrats. Can you tell us what's going on about this massive national disenfranchisement?
Well, you know, it's real odd, but it's mainly, of course, in the battleground states, the toss-up states, and particularly in Ohio, where essentially you go in since 2009 and 2011, they purged 1.1 million voters in Ohio. Now, granted that, you know, probably a couple hundred thousand of those either died or did move out of the state, but most of these people are still living in the same county. They've just changed addresses, so they have the right to vote. They can show up with a new utility bill from their new address. The vast majority of these people who have been essentially purged, literally removed from the voting rolls, are in places like Cleveland, where 167,000 people were purged because they didn't answer a letter from the Board of Election asking them if they lived at that address. But a lot of times, you know, people, and these are primarily inner-city voters, disproportionately poor, and, of course, they're targeting black voters whose only real crime is voting 95% for Barack Obama. So in a computer era, Harvey, in an ID state, why would you be purging people from voting? You can keep them on the computer. If they have a different address, you can ask them to establish identity by bringing a government check or a bank statement or a utility bill showing their new address, which is often just blocks away from the old address. But still, you know, if they're in the same county, they're eligible to vote under Ohio law. They're purging to steal the election.
Yes. Okay. So now we have this stripping of the voter rolls in places like Ohio, and you've pointed out that 2.5 million Ohioans have been stripped since 2000.
2004, actually.
2004. Well, there were several hundred thousand stripped prior to the 2004 election, which more people were taken.
Yeah. We wrote that story primarily
yes.
in inner city of Toledo, Cleveland, and the inner city of Cincinnati.
Right. All these people suspected of being Democrats were stripped from the voter rolls. We have people showing up at the polls who had lived in the same house for decades and were denied the right to vote. Now, that's obviously going on all over the country, the stripping of the voter rolls. And then you mentioned ID states. Tell us about photo ID and what that's all about.
Well, you know, at least 34 states have passed these laws. Historically, right, the gold standard was your signature, which is really hard, you know, if you're going to commit voter fraud as opposed to election fraud with private companies secretly counting your vote. Voter fraud, you'd have to go in blind, and to get one vote, you'd have to be able to expertly forge somebody's unique signature on the spot. Voter fraud is an absolute myth. The gold standard was the signature. It worked throughout U.S. history.
Now, I understand that the George W. Bush administration did a study of electoral voter theft, voter fraud, and found like 10 people in the whole country had done it in the last 5 or 10 years.
Right. Is that it just doesn't happen. That's not how you steal elections. You don't send people in to impersonate somebody else. I mean, it's you're risking a felony and you're doing it, you know, one theft at a time. It just doesn't happen that way. But the myth of voter fraud allows them to purge voters from their legitimate democratic right to vote, and that's what it's really about. It's the same thing the magicians do. You know, it's like, you know, while they're stealing your wristwatch, taking it, you know, you're looking at the rabbit in their hand.
Right, and so the Brennan Center, by requiring a photo ID in various states around the country, the Brennan Center is estimated more than 10 million people will be disenfranchised, and most of them will be Democrats, and that could very easily account for defeating Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I must note, here in Ohio, I usually vote absentee so I can get a paper ballot. Last election, I can't remember what it was, I went in, I forgot to get the absentee, so I went into my polling place, and I was asked for photo ID, even though that's not the law here. And, you know, I kind of didn't think about it and showed my driver's license. I'm going to predict, and I think this will definitely be borne out, that all across the country, poll workers will ask for photo ID, whether it's the law or not. And unless the polls are very heavily monitored by election protection people, that people will be turned away, even though they're not required to show photo ID in many states. I'm going to strongly predict that. Even in here in Ohio, we don't have a requirement for photo ID. But I will guarantee you that tens of thousands of poll workers will ask voters and will turn them away.
Even if they don't turn them away, force them to cast the infamous second-class ballot.
Yeah, the provisional ballot.
The provisional ballot, which often, you know, then it's like, unless you filled this out on the inside and, you know, wrote 47 things on the outside, they don't count it.
Right, and of course, more than 90,000 ballots, provisional ballots from the 2004 election were never counted.
And remain so to this day, yeah,
right.
From Ohio alone.
Who knows where they are? I mean, do you know where these 90,000 ballots are?
Well, they were in the Secretary of State's custody, but after 5 years, they won a court order to destroy them.
Oh, so those they no longer exist, even?
No, because it would have been real embarrassing, because disproportionately, 70-80% of those would have been cast for a Democrat. What they like to do, Harvey, is create this myth that, well, it doesn't matter if these votes don't get counted because, you know, they're split evenly like the vote, you know, 51-49, no big deal. The reality, if you look at where they're from the inner city of Toledo. You know, thousands of those votes were from the inner city of Toledo. Thousands more were from the inner city of Cleveland. So they're from areas that vote 80-90% or more Democratic. So to pretend that in any way those votes would have split evenly and it was no big deal is a massive lie.
Yes, and so we really see that, let's put it this way, 90,000 people, think about this for a minute, 90,000 people who voted in the 2004 election in Ohio never got their votes counted. I mean, you know, that's stunning here in America's oldest alleged democracy that could happen. 90,000 people that we know of, 100% guaranteed, that these people voted and their votes were not counted. And that doesn't account for, you know, all the other things that we know went on in Ohio 2004. So this disenfranchisement is a big deal. It could decide the election. I mean, the new Jim Crow was pioneered by the Democrats, the Democratic Party of Jackson, in the South. Andrew Johnson was a Republican. Andrew Jackson, who founded the Democratic Party, was a racist, bigoted, slave-owning piece of garbage, as far as I'm concerned. But that's between me and Andy Jackson. He fought over 100 duels, according to one entry. I suppose if he and I met, we would fight one today.
And you would challenge him to, you know, like, cornhole toss or something else.
I wouldn't be carrying a gun. And certainly,
hey, can he bowl?
Andrew Jackson lived out his life, actually, with a bullet lodged about an inch from his heart. But we won't go into that. At least we know he had one. But nonetheless, we are looking at the reality now in the United States of America of 10 million at least people being deprived of their vote, and if the passes any prelude, many, many millions of American voters will be asked to show photo ID even though they're not required to. And there are other methods, of course, this felony thing. Our good friend, ex-felon voting, our good friend Greg Palast, who's written the introduction to our book, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election, he's pointing out that they're still doing this ex-felon dance. Do you want to talk about that, Bob?
Yeah, it's many states have actually gone, in the old days, which is, you know, prior to the 2000 election and prior, essentially, you know, you only found kind of felons losing their votes forever in the states of the old Confederacy. Increasingly, what you're seeing is people essentially illegally voter intimidating people by calling up people that are ex-felons and telling them they can't vote. There also, in 2004 and 2008, numerous calls were made in Ohio telling people if they owed parking tickets or an unpaid traffic ticket, they would be arrested if they went to the poll, which is actually against the law in Ohio. The only police that can come in at the request of the presiding judge. But these are organizations, the Mighty Texas Strike Force set up by Karl Rove in this, you know, True the Vote, which is a bunch of, you know, white young Republican guys who think they're being real smart by saying True the Vote and are going to go out and try to intimidate voters and lie to them to make it easier for Romney to win.
Yeah, and so, and of course, they've been doing that. They did it in 2004, a little less so in 2008 because people were watching them. This year, with all that money and with sort of a lack of enthusiasm on the left for Barack Obama, I don't know who's going to stop him from doing that. So what's happened is that, of course, before the Civil War, blacks couldn't vote. After the Civil War, they were legally allowed to. We had the advent of Jim Crow, where the Democratic Party disenfranchised blacks. They laid down a modus operandi, which has now been adopted by the Republican Party in 2012, as it was in 2004, and, well, 2000, 2004, to a lesser extent in 2008, but they could decide the election in 2012, a national Jim Crow. God, we are almost out of time. Next week on the show, our next show, I'm going to have Sheila Parks, who has written a book about electronic voting machines, which is the next topic up. Bob, do you want to, if you can, if you'll join us next week on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, we can talk with Sheila Parks about the rest of this, electronic voting machines and their role, as well as the role of the nine key, the Republican governors in nine key states, such stellar grassroots Democrats as John Kasich, Rick Scott, Rick Snyder in Michigan, Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania. Bob, can you come back with us next week?
Yeah, and even worse is the wannabe governors in the Secretary of State's office that'll do whatever the governor wants them to do in order to rig the election.
Yeah, this hour flew by. We've been with Bob Patrakis, my co-author on Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election. He'll be back with us next week with Sheila Parks, author of a new book on electronic voting machines, and that's where we'll start. This is not meant to depress you. It's meant to get you out and guarantee our democracy. We'll talk to you next week here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thanks for being with us, Bob Patrakis.
Thank you.
The garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging.